Thank you, Jonga, and good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Tuesday, April 5th, 2016. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gandhi.
And I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye.
Here are our top stories this evening.
Leaked Panama Papers reveal that Zimbabwe's leading platinum giant, Zimplus Holdings, allegedly set up an offshore company more than a decade ago to pay senior managers' salaries.
Zimbabwe's white farmers who were disposed of their land feel encouraged by government's commitment to compensate them.
There's been no compensation coming forward. I think it's, for me, a start of a process here. I hope to see outcome of this.
And Zimbabwean villagers in the diamond-rich Manicaland province cry foul over missing diamond proceeds of up to $15 billion.
These mining companies never published what they were getting from the sales of the diamond.
These stories and much more coming up. Stay tuned.
Zimbabwe's leading platinum mining giant, Zimplus Holdings, allegedly set up offshore company more than a decade ago to pay salaries for its senior managers, leaked documents reveal. The alleged offshore company was set up without the knowledge of the Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe, in the process breaching the Southern Nations Exchange Control Laws. Studio 7's Ray Shoto filed this report presented by Studio 7's Tatenda Gumbo.
According to documents leaked to a leading German newspaper, Süddeutsche Zeitung, and shared by the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists, ICIJ, VOA's Studio 7, and other media organizations across the globe, HR consultancy was allegedly set up for the sole purpose of receiving funds and remunerating Zimplats' senior managers. Süddeutsche Zeitung received the files, now known as the Panama Papers, through an anonymous source and shared them with ICIJ, which organized the global collaboration. The leaked documents were reviewed by a team of more than 370 journalists from 76 nations. The documents belong to a little-known but powerful law firm based in Panama, Mossack Fonseca, which has branches in Hong Kong, Miami, Seychelles, and more than 35 other places across the globe. It also houses several incorporated firms within its offices. According to internal data of the offshore provider Northern Witchwood, registered HR consultancy in the Isle of Man and sought the services of Mossack Fonseca to facilitate the registration process. The leaked records indicate that HR consultancy services was allegedly set up so that it could receive funds and pay salaries for Zimplats' senior executives. According to the leaked documents, the shareholders and directors at HR consultancy are said to be corporations and that the senior managers to be paid by HR consultancy are Zimbabwean citizens. However, the names of the supposed recipients are not listed, nor the amount of money allegedly paid to the managers over the years. It is also not clear how the funds seemingly paid to the senior managers were to be channeled to the offshore company. But it is on record that Northern Witchwood continues to update HR Consultancy's Certificate of Incumbency, with the latest filing having been done with Mossack Fonseca last year. Zimplats denies having a relationship with HR Consultancy or Northern Witchwood. If true, this leaves the possibility that Zimplats' name was fraudulently used by Northern Witchwood to set up HR consultancy as a supposed conduit of Zimplats' salaries. An expert on banking practices in Zimbabwe, who also requested to remain anonymous, said by setting up an offshore firm to pay Zimbabwean managers without the knowledge of the central bank, Zimplats would have been illegally externalizing money and dodging paying taxes taxes on the part of its Zimbabwean managers. Central Bank Governor Dr. John Mangujga said Zimplat's alleged behavior would not be in line with government policy. Contacted for comment, Zimplat's head of corporate affairs, Busi Chindowe, said Zimbabwe Platinum Mines Private Limited has no relationship with HR consultancy. Her comments were echoed by Implat's spokesman, Johan Theron, who said his company had no knowledge of HR consultancy. Implat owns 87% of Zimplat and has significant control over appointment of its directors to various boards and ultimately over the corporate structure and salaries. Zimbabwe's former Minister of Finance, Tendai Biti, whose ministry oversaw the central bank's operations between 2009 and 2013, said if it is true that Zimplat set up an offshore company to pay salaries for its managers, then the managers at Zimplat also evaded paying taxes since they were remunerated for work they did on Zimbabwean soil. A recent central bank report claims that Zimbabwe lost $3 billion through illicit financial flows between 2009 and 2012, while Africa lost $3 trillion in illicit financial flows during the same period. The African Network of Centers for Investigative Reporting contributed to this report. This article was presented by Tatenda Gumbo on behalf of Studio 7's Ray Choto.
Thanks, Tatenda. Anti-corruption consultant Dumisani Mtombeni tells Studio 7 Zimbabwe should investigate people and companies linked to some of the shady deals contained in the Panama Papers.
These are very, very serious allegations. Against one of the biggest mining companies in Zimbabwe, Zimplat, these allegations, as a law, as a lawyer, and as an amazing anti-corruption activist and consultant, I know that everyone is presumed at law to be innocent until they are proven guilty or until they readily plead guilty themselves. But however, we should take such allegations very, very seriously, and we should equally be disturbed and concerned by such allegations because they also affect the integrity of the country itself. So as government and as Zimbabweans, we should actually demand to see such allegations being investigated thoroughly. We should get to the bottom of such allegations.
From what you know about offshore banking, how serious is this crime if committed, and what are the usual penalties?
Companies everywhere in the world are allowed to have offshore accounts, but it must be done in terms of the law. So the moment any company decides to go that route, we must know through the relevant institutions that these are legitimate accounts which are meant to be used for legitimate purposes.
That was Dumisani Mtombeni, Managing Director of Zero Tolerance Wise Consultancy, speaking with Studio 7.
Studio 7 also reached economic commentator Rejoice Ngwenya for his take on the issue.
There is a misconception that an offshore account is illegal. There is nothing illegal about an offshore account unless there is evidence that such an account or that movement of money is a result of money laundering or a deliberate attempt of tax evasion. So it must be clarified that the Panama Papers are not saying all the 11 million names that were mentioned are illegal. It's just a way of exposing how other citizens have no confidence in their local banking systems.
But we understand some companies, including one in Zimbabwe, was evading tax by opening an offshore account that has been exposed by the Panama Papers. What's your comment on that?
When you're talking about a corporate account, it depends. You know, corporate accounts have, profit after tax. So, for instance, if a corporate account is remitting those funds as profit after tax, it's not really a problem. It's just like saving offshore because that is the money that they normally use when they are recapitalizing, because it's money that is accumulated interest. But if a company is remitting funds that are part of their export without repatriating those sales from outside the country, it becomes some kind of money laundering. So it is not possible to put a collective brush of transgression around the Panama Papers, because you need to look at the individual company and see at what stage were those funds remitted.
That was Rejoice Ngwenya, an economic commentator, speaking with Studio 7's Chris Gande from Harare.
The massive leak of confidential banking documents known as the Panama Papers has implicated some big names in Africa. The documents, described as the biggest data leak in history, show how 143 politicians, including 12 national leaders, have used offshore tax havens and other means to avoid taxes and sanctions. Some of the Africans mentioned in the documents include a nephew of South African President Jacob Zuma, the twin sister of Democratic Republic of Congo President Joseph Kabila, the jailed former governor of Nigeria's oil-rich Delta State, and the petroleum minister of Angola, Africa's second biggest oil producer behind Nigeria. Others, just to name a few, include Kenya's Deputy Chief Justice, the widow of former Guinean President Lansana Conte, and the son of former UN Secretary General Kofi Annan. Stanley Achonu is Operations Manager for Budget, a civic organization that works to simplify the Nigerian general budget for ordinary Nigerians. He says while the use of offshore facilities is not in itself a crime, the leak confirms what Africans have known all along about some of their leaders, that they use these offshore bank accounts to conceal stolen public funds.
Young people out there, are you concerned about the many issues that affect you and Zimbabweans in general? Rise to the occasion. Make an impact. Let your voice be heard, and let's get talking on The Connection.
We cover a range of issues that affect young people, including unemployment, health, education, politics, and much, much more.
I am Tatenda Gumbo.
And I'm Tungamili Nkomo.
And we are the hosts for your number one youth forum, The Connection. Join us later tonight as we discuss calls for youth who were given loans under Zimbabwe's Youth Empowerment Fund to repay their loans as stipulated in their agreements.
To get involved, send us a message with the hashtag TheConnection on WhatsApp. The number is 001-202-465-0318.
Zimbabwe's white farmers were deposed of their land feel encouraged by the government's commitment to compensate them, but not all black farmers are celebrating the news. Studio 7's Dimiake Makaliele reports.
Some of Zimbabwe's white farmers whose farms were forcefully taken during the land reform program say they're encouraged by what they see as action by the government to make good on its promise to compensate them for their property. Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa reinforced his commitment to compensate the farmers at a meeting in Harare recently with former commercial farmers, resettled black farmers, non-governmental organizations, and Western ambassadors. Compensating the white farmers is part of the obligation Zimbabwe has to meet to qualify for financial assistance from such lenders as the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank. Chinamasa, however, said compensation will be largely dictated with government's ability to raise the money.
I don't think we can start talking now about which way to go, whether left or right or forward, unless we know the figure. Once we know the figure, and I think that we then enter into the next round of discussions, which is what are the modalities for payment, and on that I'm committed, government is committed.
An estimated 3,500 white farmers were kicked off their land when President Robert Mugabe authorized the land grabs, which many say led to the devastation of the country's agricultural base, turning Zimbabwe into an importer of even the most basic staples, as opposed to being the exporter it once was. Several white farmers were killed in the process, and thousands of black farm workers were displaced as well. Gilbert Laurie was evicted from his farm in 2002. He says he's encouraged by Chinamasa's assurances.
Where land is just taken away from you and people move on a daily basis, and that you have got no recourse to the law, and that there's been no compensation coming forward. I think it's, for me, a start of a process here. I hope to see outcome of this workshop.
Some of the various ways that Minister Chinamasa has said the government could raise the compensatory money include government issuance of treasury bills and the controversial imposition of a land levy on the indigenous Zimbabweans who are now farming. The call for the black farmers to now compensate the white farmers through a levy or tax has not been applauded by all. Among those is farmer Edward Tome, who says they can barely make ends meet, let alone pay an extra levy.
I've got a problem with that. This is akin to government disempowering its own people, because if you give back the land to the people, you don't tax the people in order to pay the thief who stole the land yesterday.
All agricultural land in Zimbabwe is owned by the government, and at present, farmers have no legal claims on their farms, which they say has made banks reluctant to extend loans to buy fertilizers, seed and chemicals so they can raise output. But the government says it will imminently grant the leases. Reporting for Studio 7 from Washington, this is Ndimyake Mwakalielie.
Coming up,
villagers cry foul over missing diamond proceeds worth $15 billion.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
South Africa's ruling African National Congress blocked the impeachment of President Jacob Zuma today, following a motion to impeach him after the Constitutional Court ruled that he breached the Constitution by ignoring an order to repay some of the $16 million in state funds spent on his private home.
Polls are open for Democratic and Republican presidential primary voting in Wisconsin Tuesday, where Texas Senator Ted Cruz and Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders are looking for big wins to overcome the leaders for the party's nominations.
The International Criminal Court has dropped crimes against humanity charges against Kenyan Deputy President William Ruto.
And three police officers and two gunmen are reported dead after a gunfight Monday in the Republic of Congo capital Brazzaville.
You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
Villagers in Zimbabwe's diamond-rich Marange communal lands in Manicaland province have expressed dismay at recent revelations by President Robert Mugabe that the country cannot account for diamond proceeds worth $15 billion. They claim that they have not benefited from the selling of the gems, largely mined in the province by Chinese companies and some linked to Zimbabwe's security forces. Our correspondent Ivan Chifera visited the diamond fields in Manicaland and filed this report from Chiadzwa.
Thousands of Zimunya and Marange residents told Parliament's Indigenization Portfolio Committee visiting the region that they are concerned about the alleged looting of the $15 billion as the government and diamond mining companies failed to cater for their needs. The committee was in Manicaland to find out from villagers and local government structures whether the state and the diamond mining companies had done anything to develop infrastructure in the areas where they were moved to pave the way for diamond mining activities. Each of the five diamond mining companies was expected to contribute $10 million for the development of the community, but only two companies, Mbada Diamonds and Marange Resources, only contributed $500,000. Godwin Nemasase told the committee that they were shocked by President Mugabe's revelation, which came at a time when the diamond mining companies had not contributed anything to develop their areas.
I think that Parliament must move with the times, and I believe they were aware of the looting of the diamonds. And we are also worried that no development has taken place in this area despite producing diamonds in Marange.
Nema Sase, an engineer by profession, said to make matters worse, they've over the years been harassed by members of the Zimbabwe National Army and the police for demanding what they were promised by the diamond mining companies. Villager Love Momukwada was equally concerned, saying more diamonds could actually have been stolen as there was no transparency and accountability in the mining of the gems.
What we want is transparency. These mining companies never published what they were getting from the sales of the diamond. And we are surprised to hear that 15 billion had gone missing. We believe more could have been stolen. Imagine what companies themselves took and about what about the illegal partners, the informal miners, Magwege.
Local resident Marvin Mudiwa, who is also a human rights activist, said it was disturbing to hear that diamond proceeds worth $15 billion cannot be accounted for while they are wallowing in poverty.
15 billion.
It is unbelievable for a country like Zimbabwe to be told that 15 billion worth of diamonds was stolen. This is an amount which is almost five times our national budget. And for us to be told that all that money was stolen when we are suffering, it's quite ridiculous. And I mean, surely investment should have benefited us as people living here in Marange and also as Zimbabweans in general.
They lambasted President Mugabe and local lawmaker and information minister Chris Mushowe for allegedly being dishonest and failing to update them on diamond mining activities in Manicaland province. They said since diamond mining started in 2009, there was no transparency and accountability in the mining, processing and selling of the gems, and as a result, local people did not benefit from the sale of the diamonds. While refusing to comment on President Mugabe's statements on diamonds, representatives of Mbada and Anjin mining companies said their earnings were less than $2 billion in the last 5 years. Mbada financial statements show that the company earned $1.2 billion in the last 5 years, while Anjin netted about $340 million in the same period. Former Finance Minister Tendai Biti and his predecessor Patrick Chinamasa have complained that the country was not benefiting from the Marange diamonds as there were no reasonable revenue inflows into treasury. Government has since kicked out all the diamond mining companies and appointed its own company, Zimbabwe Consolidated Diamond Company, to mine the gems in Marange. The parliamentary committee will compile a report and present it to parliament and government for actioning. Reporting for Studio 7 from Mutare, this is Ivan Chifera.
The Famine Early Warning Systems Network of Usenet has warned that the peak of the lean season in most parts of Zimbabwe will continue, resulting in the extension of food assistance by 1 month from March to April. In a statement released today, Usenet said due to the lack of green farm produce and reduced livelihood options, most households are currently facing a food crisis. Usenet expects the availability of cereals from the main harvest in May to be limited, resulting in about 1.7 million people to face a food crisis from June to September. Usenet says though the current rainfall has improved pasture conditions, immediate assistance is needed to protect livelihoods and reduce food consumption gaps. The government says at least 4 million people need urgent food aid due to the El Nino-induced drought. Food expert Reverend Forbes Matonga tells reporter Jonga Kandemiri that the situation is dire in most parts of the country.
What it means is that we are in a food crisis that is even deeper, because the agreements that are there were to feed people up to about this time, assuming that this time around people would be having at least, you know, things like pumpkins, you know, there are certain vegetables that they get from their fields and all that. So what it means is that there is nothing. So the extension simply means that, you know, the crisis is deeper. And what it means, we are now moving from another food aid program to another food aid program without a break.
Where is the food assistance expected to come from?
The main food pipes are the World Food Program and the government itself. So what it means is that, you know, people are going back to the dead donors, most likely, you know, big countries like the US, the EU, and all those other countries that donate to the World Food Program. as well as probably the government has to procure. But it is going to be difficult because within the region, we also have a grain deficit. So I think it's quite a huge challenge.
And that was a food expert, Reverend Forbes Matonga, on the phone with reporter Jonga Kandemiri from Nyadire in Uzumba, Mashonaland East.
Hello, Zimbabwe. This month we are commemorating Zimbabwe's 36th independence anniversary. The 18th of April 1980 was a significant moment celebrated by millions of people, including the late great Bob Nesta Marley, on Independence Day in Harare. What are your thoughts of that moment? And what about 36 years later? Send us your thoughts on our WhatsApp number. 001-202-465-0318. That number again, 001-202-465-0318. We are also on Facebook and Twitter.
Gender activists are expected to stage a peaceful march in Harare tomorrow to demand an end to human trafficking amidst reports that hundreds of Zimbabwean women have been turned into slaves and commercial sex workers in some Arabian nations. The Zimbabwe Women in Politics Alliance, in conjunction with the Zimbabwe Activist Alliance and other organizations, are set to march to the Kuwait embassy to present a petition calling for the immediate return of women that are still in Kuwait against their will. Efforts to get comment from the Kuwait embassy were fruitless. Lynette Mudewe of the Zimbabwe Activist Alliance tells us that women rights organizations have decided to break their silence and speak out against the practice.
What we seek to achieve is the evacuation of these stranded Zimbabwean young women back to Zimbabwe. So we are saying bring back our girls. So we are advocating and lobbying for the immediate action from the Kuwaiti government, with the assistance of the Zimbabwean government, to make sure and ensure that these girls come back to Zimbabwe as soon as yesterday. The police have received our letter of notification, and Linda Masarare, who is the co-founder and national coordinator of ZGWIPA, has been having meetings with the police. The police have been telling us that it is fine for us to go on with the demonstration. It was a noble idea. It's just unfortunate that at the last minute, yesterday, they called us to say you cannot proceed with your demonstration. So according to the law, our lawyers from Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights have already engaged the police. They are well versed with the issue, and we are going on with the demonstration because what we are doing is very constitutional and legal.
So what are you hoping to gain from this march? What are you going to be presenting to the Kuwaiti embassy, and why the Kuwaiti embassy?
From the Kuwaiti embassy, we are presenting a petition to say we want our girls to be brought home. Why we are going to the Kuwaiti embassy is because the Kuwaiti embassy was aware of the type of work our girls are going to be engaged in. We understand we are very poor. Poverty is driving us to get out of Zimbabwe and grab any chance that comes by our way. But then we have to be very vigilant as Zimbabweans to check before we leave Zimbabwe, especially going to these Arab states.
That was Lynette Mudewe of the Zimbabwe Activist Alliance speaking to us from Harare.
Stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. today, when our hosts of The Connection will be talking with listeners and experts about problems in the repayment of loans granted under the Zimbabwe Youth Fund. If you wish to join the show, call us at 001-202-619-2077. The number again, 001-202-619-2077.
Now.
Now to recap on today's top stories.
A leak to Panama Papers revealed that Zimbabwe's leading platinum mining giant Zimplats Holdings allegedly set up an offshore company more than a decade ago to pay senior managers' salaries.
Zimbabwe's white farmers who were disposed of their land feel encouraged by the government's commitment to compensate them.
And villagers in the diamond-rich Manicaland province cry foul over missing diamond proceeds of up to $15 billion.
That's our broadcast this evening.
That's it for tonight. My name is Chris Gande. Please do stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele with yours truly, Chris Gande.
And I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye, wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night.